Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/AOIS21. That is www.audibletrial.com/AOIS21. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Welcome to Between the Beltways, a political podcast series from the AOS 21 Podcast Network. Each month, your hosts, Dr. Deepan Chatterjee and Dr. Shreyasi Deb, will explore the races that will shape the central Maryland counties of Howard, Montgomery, and Prince George's in the upcoming midterm elections.
Welcome to the third episode of Between the Beltways.
Hello there.
Our guest today is Lynn Jackson, who is an ex-Apache pilot, and he's running to be the state delegate from District 27A that covers parts of PG and Charles counties. Our interview is coming up later, so stay tuned. We have not touched much on national headlines since our show started, primarily because we were focusing on the local races in the Beltway. However, there has been a lot going on nationally in the news, and we thought it would be good to at least touch base on some of those recent headlines grabbing the news. Looks like we have started a military campaign against Syria. President Trump ordered missile strikes against Bashar al-Assad's regime last Friday. These were in retaliation for the alleged chemical attacks that Assad engaged in on his own people, and he's been doing that for quite some time now. Some are saying that these strikes are part of a wag-the-dog phenomenon to remove focus from Trump's myriad legal and political troubles at home. So, Shreyasi, what are your thoughts on this?
Yes, I think we should definitely make a humanitarian case in making these strikes, just as the president did. Only to me it sounds surprising from a president who has always had America first as a cornerstone of his strategy. And there are far-reaching consequences of such strikes. The world is watching, not only for the American president's intent, but the geopolitical complications of Russian and Iranian involvement in Syria. Also, how does this impact the immediate neighbors of Syria, like Iraq, like Lebanon? And above all, the Americans in uniform who are serving in these areas, I believe they are deeply impacted by the president's wavering pronouncements, and they should know clearly what's our strategy in these areas.
So the second thing that I just wanted to touch base on is the midterm elections, the national elections, and most polls are showing Democratic takeover of the House in the midterms. According to a recent 538 blog average of polls that was conducted yesterday, I believe, Democrats are favored to take over the House over Republicans by a 46.5% to a 39.7% margin, which is roughly about a 6 to 7 point margin. Their chances, however, in the Senate are not as bright, according to most polls. The many Republicans have already started announcing that they will not be running for re-election this year. And this includes various chairs of powerful House committees, such as Bob Goodlatte, who is currently the chair of the House Judiciary Committee. And above all, Paul Ryan, the current House Speaker, announced midweek that he will not be running for re-election in the midterms. Kevin McCarthy, who is now the majority whip, is likely to take over Paul Ryan's position. It could be a speaker or minority leader, depending on whoever wins in the midterm elections once Ryan leaves office. So what do you think about this?
What I think? McCarthy is a favorite of the president. He even called him my Kevin. And we must remember that Speaker Ryan was a reluctant speaker. But overall, I think this is a good time for Speaker Ryan to leave. He just completed his 20-year mark in Congress. He would at the end of this year. He has had successes with President Trump in the White House. He could shepherd his agenda of tax reform. Moreover, as we discussed right now, it is highly unlikely that he's going to be the speaker in January. He also wanted to undertake social security reform. That's one stuff that he probably couldn't get done, and that would include Medicare and Medicaid reform, and that looks unlikely at this time in this current Congress. I must say here that after Speaker Ryan lost his father early, he often speaks about that phase of his life. He and his family were supported by the survivor benefits of this great social program, the what's called the Supplemental Security Income, SSI benefits, part of the Social Security program. Yet he would like to use his ideology to take away that exact support from families like his. Well, so long, Speaker Ryan.
The Gaithersburg Book Festival, a celebration of the written word and its power to enrich the human experience, is coming May 19th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on the grounds of Gaithersburg City Hall. Its mission? To foster an interest in reading, writing, and literary conversation. Since its inception in 2010, the festival has quickly become one of the nation's top literary events, attracting hundreds of award-winning and best-selling authors, poets, and songwriters from across the country to its quaint park-like setting in the heart of Old Town Gaithersburg. Parking and admission are free, and AS21 staff and creatives will be on hand for the festivities. For more information and a complete list of participating authors at the Gaithersburg Book Festival on May 19th, visit gaithersburgbookfestival.org.
So our guest today is Lynn Jackson, who's running for the Maryland House of Delegates from District 27A, which covers part of Prince George's and Charles counties. Lynn graduated from Surrattsville High School in 2001. He earned a Bachelor of Science in Aeronautics from Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in 2014. Lynn served in the U.S. military for 11 years. During that time, he was an air traffic controller and later became an AH-64D Apache pilot. Lynn served overseas in both Afghanistan and South Korea. He earned numerous awards, medals, and badges during his time in the military to include the Air Medal, the Army Commendation Medal, and a Combat Action Badge for combat in Afghanistan. And since leaving the military in 2014, he has continued his service to both the nation and the community in a variety of different ways. Lynn has been a law clerk at two public defender's offices. He has interned for the Attorney General. He has volunteered at a self-help center for low-income families who are involved in family court proceedings. And he's also a court-appointed special advocate. So, Lynn, I'm going to start asking you a few questions here. So my first question is, if you're elected a delegate in November 2018, what is your vision for District 27A? What are you going to fight for?
Well, first and foremost, I want to fight for expanding our roadway system that we have at Interstate 5 and 301 going from southern Prince George's County and northern Charles County going into D.C. There's a ton of congestion on the roads. It's something that everyone is very unhappy about at the moment. Also, 210 Indian Head Highway, that's another interstate in my jurisdiction, which we need to get expanded so that commuters every day going to and from Washington, D.C. have an opportunity to get to work without sitting in back to, you know, standstill traffic for 30, 40 minutes at a time. It causes a great deal of frustration, so that's something I definitely want to improve and work with our state government on getting done. Another thing that is at the top of my list is amending a bill that affects Prince George's County. It's called House Bill 1107 of 2013. Mm-hmm. It's a bill that it gave a lot of authority and power to our county executive to nominate a chief executive officer, which was previously a superintendent. It gave the county executive powers to select the chair and vice chair of the Board of Education. It took a lot of authority out of our Board of Education. I speak to a lot of my neighbors and a lot of the business owners in that area, and they want to see our Board of Education have the ability to make significant changes to the public schools in that area. So that's one of the things that I want to work on, and I can get to the detail of that a little bit later if you would like me to, sir. But and then also I want to work on improving the penalties for the criminal statutes that we have in place right now. I'm definitely not one of the people that thinks that you should get away with everything, but I think it's time that we comb the books and look over our criminal penalties and start making modifications and amendments if need be, if some of the penalties for different crimes are a bit excessive. And then finally, one of the bigger changes that I want to make as a state delegate is changing our family laws and bringing the family laws around to a lot of the common sense approaches that most of us have as far as family courts are concerned here in the 21st century.
That's great. I was just going to say that I have been stuck on that highway a couple of times. I had a friend who lived in Southern Maryland, and I went to visit him a few times, and I was stuck. And so that makes a lot of sense what you're saying.
I can tell you look angry. I can see the frustration on your brow just from that.
So yeah. Thank you so much for your service to our country and to our military. Since we are not very familiar with your district, can you tell us a little more about your district? What are the major issues there? I know you discussed some of your priorities in the campaign, but what are the overall issues in your district?
Well, I graduated from a high school in that district back in 2001, so I'm from the area, I'm from that district. I'm homegrown from that district, as opposed to other districts in Maryland. One of the things that when I speak to a lot of my neighbors is common among all of them is that we have an issue with our public schools. A lot of our neighbors have problems with the way our youth conduct themselves. I'll give you a quick example. So as for high school, the school that I graduated from back in 2001, they have an average, according to different boards, we have average SAT scores of 900, which is pretty low. We have average ACT scores of 18, only 62% of the students in school after being tested this past year were proficient in math. Only 68% of the students were proficient in English, and I think only around 80 to 82% of the students graduated. So we've got to work as far as getting our schools together. We have to work with building up our students' morale, and getting them motivated to want to go to school, and getting them to see that high school is a means to an end, and it's going to serve you one way or the other, but that's a way of getting you to where you want to go. So that's important for me. I'm also living in the area since when I was going to high school out there, there's been a lack of development in the area. They've repaved a couple of roads, which is good, but we've got the same businesses, we've got the same small businesses operating in the areas. There's no new stores being brought to the area. There's no big businesses being proposed or coming down in the area, so it's a stagnant area. So I want to bring development out there. And just for you don't know, 27A is comprised of Clinton, Maryland, Brandywine, Aggle Peak, Waldorf, the northernmost portion of Waldorf, Baden, Brandywine, Cedarville, Hughesville. And there's a couple of other locations also. So we're, the southernmost portion of Prince George's County and the northernmost portion of Charles County. We go all the way down to the southeast portion of the district down at Eagle Harbor. So it's a pretty large district.
So your district would span at least two public school systems, right? You shared some statistics right now with us. That would be Prince George's County school system.
That was specifically for Surrattsville High School, ma'am.
Surrattsville, I see.
Now, specifically for one school. Surrattsville High School is a school that's in my district. Gwynn Park High School and Thomas Stone High School. Now, Thomas Stone is in Charles County, and the former two were in Prince George's County.
Okay, great.
So basically, you know, from what I'm hearing, mainly infrastructure, you're talking about the roads, and you're also talking about the education system, which needs revamping in your district, from what I'm hearing.
And in business, we want to bring more opportunities for my neighbors. I want our neighbors to be motivated to become entrepreneurs, become business owners, to actually get into our community and provide some of the services or some of the products that these businesses are providing. I want that to be something that our neighbors envision doing, and I want to be able to empower them to do so in Maryland.
Okay, that's great. So, going off of that, who are your challengers in the primary that's coming up in June, I believe? and how are your chances compared to them? And I'm going to maybe ask the second part of the question after you answer, because my second part is about the incumbent delegate, Elizabeth Proctor. So first of all, let's talk about the primary and then how you think you fare against your opponents there, and then about the general election.
I've got three opponents. You just mentioned the incumbent, Delegate Susie Proctor.
Mm-hmm.
She took over the seat in 2010 when her husband, may he rest in peace, when he passed away at the end of the year in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
So she's been in that position now for the past two, now going on 3 years. My other two opponents are Dr. Joseph Spears.
Mm-hmm.
He's a pastor, works at Bowie State. And I've got a fellow veteran, a young man by the name of Ronald McDaniel Jr. He's also running to be the delegate in 27A as well. So as far as my chances are concerned, I think I have a great chance. I'm the only one from the area that's actually grown up in the area. I understand the needs of the people in the community. I'm in the community quite often. And I've got the understanding of how laws apply to my neighbors' lives when they go to court.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a law degree. You didn't mention that a little bit earlier, but I've also got a law degree. So I understand the law. I want to be able to change laws. I understand that the role of being a lawmaker actually entails drafting laws, amending laws, and repealing different laws. I've got the ear of my neighbors, and I think that I have a great chance at defeating all three of them.
So I looked up some of the, I'm interested in polling, and I really couldn't find any good polls for your district.
I'm in the lead, just in case you didn't know.
I'm sorry.
He's in the lead.
Oh, okay. that's great. So why do you think Elizabeth Proctor has not done a good enough job, or, do you think she's done a good job and you could do better for the district?
Well, I know that I'm just a better person for the job. Ms. Proctor, before she got into the office, she was retired for over 10 years, going on 15 years. She did absolutely nothing for the community while she was retired. She served on a couple of boards, but
mm-hmm.
anybody who served on a board knows that that's not real community service.
Mm-hmm.
So she sat around and did absolutely nothing while her husband was in the General Assembly in Maryland. She was not a community advocate. She wasn't doing anything for the community. And she was filled into the position by her husband and her good friend, Senator Mike Miller. He put her into that position, and as far as I'm concerned, and what I take from my neighbors, she is just nothing more than another elected official who votes yay or nay depending on what Senator Miller decides that she should vote yay or nay for. So she hasn't done a good job with lawmaking as far as I'm concerned, and I'll give you a quick example of that. This past session, she was a co-sponsor of a bill called House Bill 1152 or 1158. I apologize, I don't have it up in front of me, but the general premise of this bill is that she wanted to give a judge the authority to continue to have parents on the hook for child support after a child was graduated from high school and after they passed 18 years old. And most of us who make it to the point where our kid hits 18 and then get out of high school, that's a point to where most parents go, okay, I'm done with my actual legal obligation. This child is no longer a child. Our society has drawn a line in the sand where 18 is the point where you're an adult. So we all look forward to that day. And she wants to enact legislation where a judge can go, hey, wait a minute. It doesn't matter if your child's going to college or is not in college. She wants to give the authority to a judge to go, hey, listen, you're actually going to continue to pay child support until whenever I feel that it's time for you to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And again, she doesn't understand the basic premise that once you're an adult, we may, obviously as parents and obviously for our loved ones, we provide extra support as need be, as we feel that we should. But that's something that we choose to do once you become an adult. Your obligation is over. So she doesn't have the ear of the community. She hasn't done any community service. She hasn't used her title as state delegate to really get into the trenches and figure out what's going on. She hasn't hosted any events. You've seen a lot of pictures doing a few different things at other people's events, and she shows up to a lot of other people's events. But again, she's a state delegate. It's incumbent on her to take the lead, to listen to what her neighbors have to say as far as the issues are concerned, and to start working on solutions, and to have her neighbors actually feel that she's with them.
Mm-hmm.
And she's lost the community, she's lost the district in that regard. I've spoken to many people who have tried to email her, tried to call her, tried to speak to her, and they get absolutely nothing. So she should not be an issue for me as far as defeating an opponent this up-and-coming election.
So per the CDC, Maryland has seen one of the highest increases in opioid-related deaths in 2016. That's the latest data that we have. What are your thoughts on a public policy solution to the opioid addiction epidemic in our state?
Well, one of the first things we need to do is actually speak to the people who suffer from this, from these addictions. I've done, I'm a PhD student at the moment, and I've done some research on those who suffer from addiction to methamphetamines and other types of illicit drugs. And I'm going to be honest with you, it's absolutely terrifying, some of the stories, once you actually listen to the things that these people deal with regarding addiction. It's absolutely terrifying, and it's one of the things that motivates me to never do drugs, but it's terrifying the way that they describe the way that these drugs call to them, middle of the night, middle of the day, it doesn't matter, with their family. So it's very scary. So the first step, I think, is, two parts, actually. First and foremost, we need to speak to those who suffer from addiction to figure out what it is that they need in order to provide them the best options available to get them back to becoming sober and keeping them sober. But it's very difficult. Like I said, you know, those who are hooked on meth and heroin, it's, like I said, I've read a lot of information regarding addicts and listened to a lot of testimony. It's very scary. The second part of my approach is actually getting to our schools and our neighborhoods. And rather than waiting for our neighbors to get addicted, we need to start educating them on this horrible process that addicts go through. I think one of the bigger things when I was coming out, one of the bigger things that motivated me to not use drugs is actually seeing what the effects of crack had, you know, in this area, in the D.C. area, in the Prince George's County area. I saw that firsthand.
Right.
And I didn't need for anybody to say, hey, look, don't do that. Although we had programs like D.A.R.E., we had programs, and I had, you know, my teachers and people mentoring me, telling me not to do it. But I could just look and see and go, okay, look, this isn't something to play with. You know, these are actually my neighbors that are suffering from this. I don't want to deal with not having any teeth. I don't want to deal with going through addiction and withdrawal. So I'm not going to do it. So I think what something we need to look at doing is actually either doing one of two things, either getting our kids to these addiction clinics so they can see, like, this is what happens when you take these drugs. Your life is going to be significantly changed forever, or we can have some of these addicts come to school and actually talk to students. And again, I think once they see firsthand how powerful these drugs are, and they hear these addicts talk about how hard it is to stop, like, it's not a joke, it's not a game at all, and it's very scary. And they listen to how these addicts are telling them that these drugs actually call to them, you know, 24/7 at all times of day and night. With their kids, with their families, I think it'll motivate kids to go, you know what, I'm not dealing with that. I'm not playing that game. That's fire right there that I don't want to play with.
Right. So any thoughts on gun control policy? That's the other area that our country is talking a lot about right now, especially with the Parkland High School shooting and the huge March for Our Lives in D.C. and many other cities across the country, in fact, across the world. So what would be some of the solutions that, as a state delegate, you could work on?
Well, one of the things that you mentioned when you introduced me is you said that you let your viewers know that I actually worked for two public defender's offices, and I also worked with the Office of the Attorney General. Anyone who's worked in the court system or any substantial amount of time knows that people who commit crimes have weapons. They are very common, very much so. What I've always wondered is, why aren't prosecutors actually prosecuting? We've got laws on the books now. To give you a quick example, 18 United States Code, Section 922 or 923 is one of the federal codes that limits who and who cannot possess firearms. Maryland has safety codes. Maryland Safety Code 5-133 is another code that we have that is an extensive list of who may or may not have firearms and for what particular reason. I believe within the Maryland code there's a 5-year minimum for anyone who is caught with possession of weapons that is not authorized to have them. It's not something that the judge can dibble-dabble with back and forth. Again, it's a five-year minimum, and anyone who knows who works in a courthouse or criminal proceedings will tell you they all have guns. So my question is not whether we need to write more laws. My attention more so is looking at our prosecutors and going, hey, why aren't you charging these people for these gun possessions? Mm-hmm. We've got plenty of laws on the books right now. More laws are not going to convince drug dealers. More laws are not going to convince thieves to not carry weapons. That's something that people don't quite get. As far as the school shootings that have been going on, if I'm going to be frank, when I was in high school, I saw weapons all the time from kids who were, and believe it or not, kids sell drugs in school. And I saw it when I was in school. One of the first time I actually saw a MP5 weapon, which is a submachine gun, was actually on the basketball court. Rattsville High School used to have a basketball court. So I saw one of the first time I actually saw it was on the basketball courts at my high school. So. Mm-hmm. They're there. They're prevalent. Again, and the laws are there. The laws are in place. We can write books upon books upon books of laws that will restrict more gun owners, like you and I. But at the end of the day, we've got laws on the books, and it's up to our prosecutors to actually go, hey, listen, you got caught with a gun. We're going to charge you for it. So I've always scratched my head with prosecutors, our state's attorneys, and different prosecutors and their assistants, rather, as far as why aren't they, when we have evidence, clear evidence, and there's plenty of reasonable doubt that, you know, we can use when it comes to these different proceedings. We've got clear evidence that these people have weapons. They've been caught with weapons. Plenty of informants will tell police officers, hey, this person has a weapon. You can go to any high school right now. You can talk to kids who go, hey, listen, this person has a weapon. This person doesn't have a weapon. You can go on the streets and talk to people on the streets and say, yeah, this person typically travels with a weapon. So why aren't they prosecuting these cases to the point where our judges are seeing more of these cases where people are in possession of weapons? And it's not motivating our cops to go out and actually specifically search for people with weapons. So mm-hmm. I'm not in favor of just stacking up more and more laws for law-abiding citizens, for gun owners. I'm for people actually enforcing laws that are on the books.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your thoughts on the NRA? Are you pro-NRA, you know, anti-NRA, you don't care? What are your thoughts on the NRA?
They don't affect my life in any way. So I'm not pro-NRA. I'm not against the NRA. I understand that they are pro-Second Amendment. I like the Bill of Rights written by our forefathers. I'm a big fan of that. So, you know, they're fighting for a particular cause, but, you know, they lobby our policymakers and our elected officials, just like, you know, the million other lobbyists out there. It's just a topic that our news media decides to put to the forefront. So they're in the news quite often. But again, as far as I'm concerned, they're just a lobbyist organization fighting for the Second Amendment. And I see that they've got some good points, and like I said, I'm not for or against them.
All right. So we are going to quickly end with a rapid fire round where we ask you four quick questions, and you know you can take your time, answer you know as much or as little as you want.
So I'm taking fifth on all of them.
my first question, since you're a Maryland native, what is your favorite thing about Maryland?
The community, my neighbors. I think I've got some great neighbors. We've got a community full of some very loud personalities, and I really like that. So that's my favorite thing about Maryland.
Mm-hmm. Who are your heroes?
Well, my heroes? I don't have many heroes. One of the first people that came to mind is actually Harriet Tubman.
Mm-hmm.
She's someone that I think did remarkable things, and somebody that a lot of people don't. You kind of hear the name Harriet Tubman, but you don't really actually know what some of the things that she did post Civil War. Mm-hmm. So she's someone who I, as far as courage is concerned, I can only hope to have the type of courage that she had. I look up to some of the ancient Greeks. Alexander the Great was one of my heroes. Napoleon Bonaparte, France's former emperor, obviously. Yeah, I think those three are the first three people that come to mind.
All right. What's your favorite food?
Oh, no. Favorite food? I love I love Chinese food, if I'm to be honest. It's always been a weakness of mine.
All right. Well,
some good Szechuan chicken or some beef and broccoli. Always.
Yeah. We love Chinese food as well.
Yeah, we love Chinese food, so that's our favorite too.
So just before we end, on a quick note, Lin, anything you would like our listeners to know about that we haven't discussed already?
Well, if you could, ma'am, if they're curious about getting more information about myself, I'm on Facebook at Jackson4, as in the number 4, and then MD, the two-letter identifier from Maryland. Mm-hmm. They can also send me a text or give me a call. I'm at 301-857-1847. I'm very easy to reach out to. I return text messages. My email is Jackson4MD, the same thing as my username for Facebook, but at gmail.com. I'm very grateful for everyone who's taken the time to listen. I'm thankful for you two for actually giving me an opportunity to speak, so thank you so much. I'm just a regular guy who thinks that I can do a lot better job with legislating. I know that I can do a significantly better job than our current incumbent at getting in the neighborhood and working with our neighborhood and listening to our neighbors and to the members of our community. And I will work to have monthly community forums to where my neighbors can come out and speak to me. I'm not accepting any campaign contributions. So I always tell my neighbors who want to give to my campaign, hey, listen, keep your money invested in stocks, bonds, CDs, whatever you want to invest in, keep your money. Don't give your money to anyone who's sitting there begging for money. One of the opponents that I'm going against, Dr. Spears, has a little advertisement where he says, hey, I'll do 10 push-ups for $10, and I think it's absolutely sickening begging people for money like that. You know, I'm going to do push-ups and carve up my chest, so you know, after you pay me $10, it actually makes no sense. He doesn't understand what being a public servant is. My other opponent that's in the race, Ronald McKinney Jr., seems like a good guy. He's a fellow veteran, so I'm not going to bad talk him, but at the same time, he's not from this area. He hasn't been in this area long enough. He doesn't understand that we need changes to our roads immediately. So that, you know, when he's sitting in traffic on 210 on Indian Head Highway or on Branch Avenue or on Crane Highway, he doesn't understand that we're starting our day off in a very bad way because we're sitting in traffic blowing our horns at each other. So, again, he's a fellow veteran, so I'm not going to talk bad about him, but I know I'm the best person for the job. I've got a degree in law. I've got a JD. I understand how laws are applied to people like you and I, when judges are seeing us, if we are in some type of lawsuit, whether it's criminal or civil, I understand how laws are applied, and I know I can do a better job.
All right. So just one final thing that just came to my mind. What are you doing your PhD in? You said you were getting your PhD.
Yes, sir. I'm getting a PhD in public policy and administration, specializing in homeland security.
Oh, great. I think Shreyasi has a PhD in public policy. So
she
sent
me some of her notes.
So my PhD is in public policy, but I specialized in health policy at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County.
Send me those notes.
Sure. All right. Good luck with your race and good luck with everything.
Yes, good luck.
I'll win it. I'll have to come back on. Speak to you guys again. I'd love that.
Sure.
And thank you so much for your service.
Well, thank you, man.
Yes, and that was candidate Lin Jackson, who's running for state delegate from District 27A. Thank you, Lin.
Thank you, sir.
This has been Between the Beltways, a production of the AOS 21 Podcast Network. Find it each month on Podomatic, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, TuneIn, and our home on the web, audio.aois21.com. Keep up with the news between episodes on our Facebook at facebook.com/btbeltways, on Twitter at btbeltways, and on our WordPress blog, betweenthebeltways.wordpress.com.
Copyright 2018 AOIS21 Media LLC. All rights reserved. AOIS21 Media. What do you want your story to be?